This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. I am fired up, ladies and gentlemen, for today's episode, as we've got two great guests jumping on this show, a former national champion and a man who fancies his analytics, Chipolytics. It is Bobby Carpenter and Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 podcast. As we reach across the aisle, we shake hands with our friends in the college football podcast world. Two really fun conversations with both of them, and one of them courtesy of a Twitter request. As we've been saying, if you want to leave a five-star review and say, hey, wouldn't mind hearing from this particular guest, we had a request in for Scott Docterman, and thank you to that. I thought Scott was awesome last time out. And then we had a Twitter request from Doug Egelhoff, and he said, please ask Bobby Carpenter to be on the College Football Betting Pod is great. Had to throw that in there as well. So Doug, your wish is our command, and I am very happy for said request because Bobby was great. Really fun conversation with him, talking Ohio State. What does he expect from his alma mater this upcoming season? Went a little bit further in the Big Ten as well. And then Chip, we went all over the place and talked schedule strength, talked a little Diego Pavia, which we're going to get to here in just a moment, and also talked about what he expects and what he's hearing out of his backyard, which is the triangle where you've got NC State, Duke, and UNC. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. As I say, you know, we're getting into the summer months. Maybe you're out and about on vacation. You're down in the Outer Banks. You're out in San Diego, wherever you may be. You know, just tell a random stranger. Say, hey, have you heard about the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast? Maybe you're going abroad and you should tell people about it. According to producer Ryan Hunter, there are some folks across this world listening to this podcast. I'm not lying. He tells me the truth, unless he's lying to me, which is certainly possible because he's trying to boost my ego. All right. Couple things here in the open. Last week, we talked about the sandwich spot that I adored, which was Arkansas heading to Memphis in, what is that, week four. Week three, they play Ole Miss. Week five, they host Notre Dame, and then right there in the middle, they have to go on the road to take on Memphis. So it kind of got the gears going. And also, I got a tweet, and I want to find this tweet because there are so many unique aspects to the college football schedule. And I went through as many as I could find, trying to see which ones are interesting from a situational standpoint. And there are a bunch of them. If you look around and you see which ones are, you know, an interesting one. Swycat Sides says, how about this one for Illinois? At Indiana, September 20th. Home to USC, September 27th. Home to Ohio State, October 11th. Sandwich in between, a road trip on 10-4 to Purdue. Woof. Look out for a year one signature win for Barry Odom, who will be off a bye, and a Notre Dame loss. Thank you. Doing a little work for me, Swycat Sides. And I would agree. That is one of the spots that I picked out here for Illinois. So I'm going to run through situational spots that I think are of interest. And once again, majority of these don't have lines out yet. But when you're looking at win totals, when you're looking at just games to keep in the back of your mind, let's run through some possibilities. Not saying they're blind bets, but possibilities for situational spots in 2025. Let's start in the SEC. We'll go conference by conference. Georgia, November 1st, cocktail party against Florida. November 15th, Texas. In the middle, the worst team in the SEC, Mississippi State. What are we looking at for a point spread for that game? On the road, Stark Vegas, ding, 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 ding. All those cowbells banging around. November 8th, UGA goes to Stark Vegas in between Florida and Texas. Alabama, third Saturday in October, always their showdown against Tennessee. They lost this game a year ago. The following week, they play South Carolina. South Carolina, feisty foe, right? A lot of buzz. Bruce Feldman had an article this week about Lenora Sellers, the expectations for him this year. South Carolina at home catching 7.5. Certainly an interesting spot. Alabama has a bye week following the South Carolina game, and then they play LSU. A little bit of a sandwich spot there, but I think more of a letdown potentially after a revenge spot against rival Tennessee. Also, South Carolina find themselves maybe in a good situational spot. Oklahoma, who's their arch rival? Texas. They've got Red River October 11th in Dallas, Cotton Bowl. Following week, guess what? Going to Columbia to take on South Carolina. And then after that, a home game against Ole Miss. Oklahoma can't really afford to overlook anybody. But after playing your arch rival, who probably is going to be a top five team in the country, you got to turn around and you got to play on the road at South Carolina. Two really good spots for South Carolina, back-to-back weeks. Home to Oklahoma and home to Alabama. We'll get to Diego Pavia, but they get LSU at a pretty tasty spot, Vanderbilt does this year. LSU plays South Carolina October 11th, Texas A&M October 25th. In between then, the boys from Baton Rouge go up to Nashville to take on Vanderbilt. Florida, Georgia, November 1st, cocktail party. November 15th, road trip to Kiffintown to take on Ole Miss. In between there, Coach Stoops and Big Blue Nation. Don't expect much from UK this year, but good spot there to take on Florida. Also a good spot to take on Kentucky, or not a good spot, I should say. How about Tennessee? Rivalry game, Alabama, October 18th. November 1st, they welcome in Oklahoma. Oklahoma is what? Josh Heupel's alma mater. Who do they play in between? Alabama and Oklahoma? Yep, you guessed it. Road trip to Lexington. And then lastly, because we're going to talk some Diego Pavia here in just a moment. Vanderbilt last year, if you remove the game they played against Alcorn State, they were only a favorite in two other games. They did not cover either one of those. They lost one of them outright to Georgia State. They also did not cover against Ball State. So Diego, the underdog god that is Diego Pavia, how about this start to the season for Vanderbilt? Week two at Virginia Tech. Week three at South Carolina. Week four, revenge against Georgia State, who they lost to last year. And then week six, they go to Alabama. Now, Vanderbilt might not be in the world of overlooking anybody, but if you think back to last year and some of the spots that they found themselves in, a random game against Ball State late in the season where they did not cover a 27-point spread before they played Texas, play Utah State. Utah State, not expected to be very good, massive changeover this year, but you know who their coach is? Bronco Mendenhall. Damn good coach. Look at what he did last year with New Mexico, a team that I think had a preseason win total of like 1.5, ended up with 5 wins a year ago. Now, Devin Dampier ain't walking through that door up in Logan. But September 27th, Vandy hosts the Aggies of Utah State. All right, Big Ten. We'll run through these quick. We mentioned the Illinois one that was pointed out by someone on Twitter. Swycat, appreciate that. That's a very good one. How about Penn State? How do they respond off of the whiteout? September 27th, whiteout game against Oregon, rematch of last year's Big Ten championship game in which they lost. They get their wish. They get prime time on September 27th. They get the whiteout. Trip out to UCLA the following week. Could be weird going out to the Rose Bowl to take on UCLA. How about Ohio State off of the Penn State game at Purdue? Is that just kind of a snooze fest, win by 28 type game as a, you know, 30 plus road favorite? Michigan, you know, fire up chips. I don't know what to expect from the boys from, where are they from? Mount Pleasant? Is that where Central Michigan is located? But I don't know what to expect from Central Michigan this year. But all I'll say is that's a weird spot for Michigan. At Oklahoma, primetime, September 6th. At Nebraska, September 20th, sandwiched in the middle, the chips with a new head coach, probably going to be terrible. That spread's going to be like 47. Could you get a 45-3 type of Michigan win in that one? What about Indiana? A lot of love about Indiana this year. A lot of excitement. We did have one listener let us know, as we talked about it last week, that he had a 200-1 ticket on Indiana to make the playoff last year. Hell of a ticket to have. Here we go. Indiana's schedule. October 11th at Oregon. October 18th, home to Michigan State. October 25th, home to UCLA. And then November 8th at Penn State. Now, let's remember who we're talking about. Kirk Cignetti, if he can run up the score, he's going to run up the score. As we saw last year, they were absolute cover machines. Many of us, or I'll just say me, try to find times to go against Indiana from a point spread standpoint. That obviously did not work out all that well. If you look at how they've performed last year, they beat Maryland by 2 touchdowns last year as a 7-point favorite at home. At Maryland, November 1st, Maryland coming off a bye the week after the Hoosiers travel to Happy Valley. Kind of a weird spot there. I don't know what Maryland's going to be. I don't think they're going to be very good. Win total sitting at 4.5, but I think that could be a tricky spot. And speaking of Maryland kind of in a weird spot, maybe Washington is just in a massive letdown, but you've got the Apple Cup September 20th. Against Washington State, a game you lost last year in, I believe, a rainstorm. It was ugly. I had Washington. And then you host Ohio State. And then the following week, Damon Williams and company have to go to Maryland. So Maryland, once again, not expected to be very good this year in the Big Ten, but I think two spots that could be advantageous for them from a scheduling standpoint would be October 4th against Washington, where Washington would be off of back-to-back big-time games, and then also November 1st against Indiana. Maryland, by the way, worth noting here, they will be coming off of a bye in both of those games. So they have a bye before hosting Washington and a bye before hosting Indiana. So if Mike Locksley's squad is going to show any sort of life, maybe those are two of the spots. All right, ACC, let's go through these pretty quickly, because I thought a couple of them were interesting. SMU, I think there's two spots for the Ponies to be a little bit worried about or keep on their radar. So the Ponies, after going to the playoff last year, they bring back their quarterback in Kevin Jennings. Schedule has got some challenges on it. How about early on? So they have an FCS foe week one. Then they play Baylor. Baylor, an in-state rival, they have not played in 9 years since 2016. So that's going to be a big game. Sawyer Robertson and company, very good quarterback. And then September 20th, they go across town to take on their rival in the Iron Skillet Showdown, TCU. Last year, they put up 66 on TCU. That's a big game for them, obviously, with Sonny Dykes being the former SMU coach. In the middle, they're going on the road to FBS newbie Missouri State. I have no idea what this point spread will be. It'll be high. Missouri State, this is their home opener as an FBS team. Now, once again, could Missouri State, a 8-4 team a year ago in the FCS, be absolutely horrendous? Certainly possible. But they go at USC, at Marshall, their home opener in the FBS ranks. They welcome in a playoff team. That could be a weird spot. And then let's go later in the season. I think all of us would think of the three best teams entering this year in the ACC in some order: Clemson, Miami, SMU. I think it's in that order, but that could be debated. Well, SMU has to go to Clemson October 18th and hosts Miami November 1st. Smack that sandwich, meet right in the middle. Hello, Wake Forest. Wake Forest hosting SMU. The Demon Deeks will be coming off a bye, and this just feels like a spot where Jake Dickert, in his first year as the head coach of the Demon Deeks, wouldn't you like to make a message? Big, big spot there, off a bye against SMU, who will have just played Clemson, and the following week they play Miami. That is what we call a sandwich spot. How about another letdown here for a team playing Clemson? How about the Duke Blue Devils? Go make a big splash in the portal. They get Darian Mensah to come in from Tulane. Oddly enough, they have Tulane on the schedule this year. But let's go a little bit later on in the schedule. November 1st, Duke plays Clemson. You remember the last time Duke played Clemson? Season opener 2023, they beat them. Riley Leonard kind of burst onto the scene with the game that he had there on that, I believe it was a Monday night. And now Clemson hosts Duke. Both teams coming off a bye. That's a chance to be a pretty big game, right? After Duke plays Clemson, they've got to go to, as the cool kids like to say, the rent. Go play UConn. Joey Fagnano. Pretty good quarterback up there at UConn. 8-win team a year ago, won their bowl game. That feels weird. Off of a Clemson game, going up to Stores, or Hartford, I believe, is where the rent is located, take on UConn. And look, when you're UConn and you're an independent, one of technically two independents, I guess Oregon State and Washington State still consider themselves part of the Pac-12 or Pac-2. But for UConn, you look at their schedule this year, I mean, that's probably their biggest home game of the year, right? Home games against Central Connecticut, Ball State, FIU, UAB. Get Air Force, get a Power 5 team, Power 4 team coming to your town. And you've got a veteran quarterback and a pretty good team. They won 9 games if you include their bowl win a year ago over UNC. And speaking of which, how about Boston College taking on UConn? Boston College goes at Pitt, home to Clemson, home to UConn, at Louisville, Notre Dame, SMU. I mean, we just got a big old, big ciabatta bread outside the middle there, because you're looking at Pitt, home to Clemson, no weeks off, home to UConn, at Louisville, Notre Dame, SMU. If you're UConn and your season is a bunch of random ass teams, I would say your two biggest games of the year are Boston College and Duke. And oh, by the way, Boston College plays Clemson October 11th. UConn is off. So two games to keep UConn Jim Morris squad on the mind there from a situational standpoint. And I'll give you two more from the Big 12. Let's go to Iowa State. I texted Brad Powers today and I said, how good is South Dakota going to be? They're an FCS team. Because from a situational standpoint, this is as good as it gets. This might be, outside of the Arkansas at Memphis game, this might be my favorite situational spot that I've found. Week 0, Iowa State goes over to Dublin to play Farmageddon against rival Kansas State. Week 2 is the battle for the Cy-Hawk, arch rival Iowa. They did not take a week off traveling back from Dublin. Instead, South Dakota is on their roster, on their schedule. And as Phil Steele pointed out in his preview magazine, Iowa State is 3-10 ATS against FCS teams. Last year, they opened up with a game in which they won but did not cover against I forget who it was off the top of my head, but this is an Iowa State team. They covered against North Dakota. This is a South Dakota team that made it to the semifinals of the FCS a year ago. I think they lost a bunch in the portal, but that is a brutal spot for Iowa State. Give us, what do we want? Give us north of 3 touchdowns, all right? So we can get South Dakota here in that spot. And similarly, how about Kansas State? You go to Dublin, you play Iowa State, you come back home, you play North Dakota. The game that I actually circled is week 2 when they play Army. Army, a team that won the AAC a year ago, you know they're going to be a pain in the ass going out to the Little Apple. So two games that I noted there in the Big 12. So bunch of situations. I know I threw a bunch at you there, but I just... running through the schedules, you're always kind of looking for these particular spots. All right, before we get out of here and welcome in Bobby Carpenter, I did want to hit on this. Did you see what our guy Diego Pavia had to say on, I believe it was Bussin' with the Boys? So Diego Pavia entering another year of college football down there at Vanderbilt. Diego Pavia, who, by the way, helped guide the Commodores to a lovely 8-2 ATS record last year as an underdog. And also, if you look back at his time at New Mexico State, if you remove the game he got injured against Liberty in the CUSA championship, New Mexico State in 2023 was 5-1-1 ATS as a dog. So over the last 2 years, when he stays healthy, Diego Pavia as an underdog is 13-3-1. But he is a guy that is not afraid to speak his mind, I would say. Here's what he had to say about in-state rival Tennessee, who they wrap up the season against. Vanderbilt is going to run Tennessee after this year. This is going to be the new staple of college football. It's going to happen here at Vanderbilt. And then he also said, regarding the Big Ten, quote, "You want to play with the best. You don't want to play with the Big Ten. You ignore those calls. The SEC, it's like week after week, you're going to get beat on. The Big Ten, you're not going to get beat on with Purdue and Nebraska's." Diego out there swinging a big stick, man. A lot of big words there from Diego Pavia, who, look, we love, made us a lot of money. But you're putting that target on your back, and you better be ready week two heading down to Vanderbilt, or heading to Virginia Tech, after you beat them last year as a 13-point dog at your place. You ain't going to be a 13-point dog in Blacksburg, that's for sure. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll welcome in former national champion, now member of the media, Bobby Carpenter, to talk some Ohio State. Then after that, Chip Patterson from CBS Sports. It's the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. And as promised, we welcome in Bobby Carpenter. He's all over the place. You can catch his show on X every day, Bobby Carpenter Show, The Morning Juice in Columbus, and also on SiriusXM's College Station. Bobby, appreciate you jumping on, man. It's it's funny. I can only imagine if I had you on prior to the Tennessee game last December, how different the mindset is for the folks there in Columbus. So winning cures all, right? But I imagine there's still a portion of the fan base is like, yeah, but I want to beat Michigan.
It's amazing when you say that. You know, it's funny, like, being around this now and being done from playing, for goodness heck, it's been about, what is it, like 11, 12 years. And getting out of college now, which will be 20 this year, and just being around the program and watching, you know, Coach Tressel and then Urban Meyer and, you know, now Ryan Day, and getting a chance to kind of know those guys in different ways over the years, and trying to, you know, around the facility and seeing the teams, you know, how they kind of handle everything. And, you know, Ryan, there's definitely a confidence, and you can see that now, where you don't want to be the guy that's like, on the list that, hey, who's the best coach to not win a national championship right now? And winning that, I think, you know, kind of unburdens you a little bit from, you know, maybe some of the expectations. And so now, you know, you're the third coach, successive coach, to win one at Ohio State. And so you feel good about that. You're empowered, you're emboldened. But coming out of that, you know, that Michigan game, it was going to be interesting to see. And I said this, you could hear all the guys talked about him publicly. So I felt very confident that he still had the team. Those guys cared about him a lot. And then that ultimately manifested itself. And ironically enough, you know, we've had the debate and the conversation in Columbus, Ohio, if Ohio State beats Michigan, do they end up winning the national championship? Does it end up working out the same way? And, you know, I don't know if you can unequivocally say that that answer is yes, just given how they looked in that, on that run, which was definitely meteoric and very, very special.
You know, it's funny. I think back to the podcasts and the shows that we did on VSiN leading up to that game. And, you know, I always called a public dog, or Chris Felica likes to say, a dog with fleas. Everybody, Bobby, was, oh, Tennessee's going to win the game outright. I don't even need the points. And then lo and behold, Ohio State goes up there and takes care of business and makes the run that they ultimately did. But I want to flip it to this because you are one of the few people that can answer this question on this forum. You won a national championship, and the next year you didn't win a national championship. It's not like you guys stunk, but you went 11-2. You won your bowl game, but lost a couple of contests. What's your feel of Columbus right now? Is there any complacency? I know they'll never say it, but there's a lot of changeover. There's a new quarterback. Obviously, Jeremiah Smith and Caleb Downs, in my opinion, are the two best players in college football entering this year from a talent standpoint. What do you feel like this team will be like this year, knowing that they got to the mountaintop and Ryan Day got that proverbial monkey off his back?
Well, there's some changes too, like you mentioned, not just on the player side, but the coaching side with Jim Knowles leaving and Matt Patricia coming in, Chip Kelly going out to Vegas and getting paid a boatload of money. People are like, why would he leave? I'm like, he's getting paid $6 million to just be a coordinator. I'm like,
he wants to hang with me. It's just the facility. Yeah. It's just right down the street from me, Bobby. He wants to hang with me. That's cool.
Oh, yeah. It's a great spot. Believe me, well, he lived right down the street from me for about 8 months before he left. And I got to know Chip pretty well and had a great respect. He's very, very talented as a coach and a great communicator. But this team's going to have a little bit of a different feel to it. And, you know, after you win, you know, success is like martinis. It'll relax you. But I think the guys who are coming back, like there's a desire. They're highly competitive to try to go do it again. And the thing is, in the old era where it was the BCS and then even in the CFP, it didn't give you much room for error. And so there's going to be some slip-ups, especially when you're replacing as much as Ohio State is. And, you know, for that matter, you look at you know, some of the other teams that have been out there and what they've had to replace. You know, Notre Dame obviously lost a lot. Mm-hmm. Texas lost a lot. And so as you go through this, like, you're talented, but you need to gain that experience. So before, if you lost the game like we did in 2003, like, you were done. And thankfully, we could have probably still got in if we would have beaten Michigan, and we weren't able to do that at the end of the year. But some of it is, too, like, you just don't get all the bounces anymore either. You don't get all the breaks that maybe fell your way prior. But this team's motivated. I don't know if they're – I would not say complacent, because there's a lot of young guys out there that want to go out and earn their stripes and earn their opportunities. And so when you get that, as long as you get the right guys on the bus, like, and they're given their chance, like, they want to go earn their name and be the next star and be that next Jack Sawyer or be the next Will Howard or Quinshon Judkins or Travion Henderson, whatever it might be, the JT Tuimoloau, like, those guys, they want to be that star. And so these guys have been waiting for a while. And now it's their turn to be the leaders. And it's been fun to kind of watch them this offseason evolve in that process.
You know, it's funny you mentioned, you know, Jack Sawyer, the iconic play that'll forever be remembered, I'm sure, in Ohio State lore, the scoop and score against Texas on the goal line to clinch up the semifinal and then ultimately get him to the national championship game. I bring him up because I'm curious your thoughts on this, because you look at a Notre Dame, you mentioned they lost a lot, but from a talent standpoint, you say, well, Notre Dame's got a lot of talent coming back, which is true, but they lost defensively Howard Cross. They lost Jack Kaiser. They lost Xavier Watts. They lost these kind of graduate students, if you will, to, you know, from a defensive mindset in Al Golden's defense. So from a leadership standpoint, who is the biggest piece that Ohio State has to, bring or has to replace this year?
Well, and let's not forget too, Notre Dame, they also lost Al Golden.
So yeah, he's gone. Exactly.
So
yeah.
Like, you lose the coordinator. So you're kind of reinstalling a new defense, if you will. For Ohio State, I'd probably say kind of, you know, two guys that governed a lot on the defense right down the middle. Both of them getting drafted in the fourth round. They're both, you know, fifth year players that played a ton of ball, very, very smart guys and heady football players. And both of them had very different journeys to kind of be in there, but Cody Simon and Lathan Ransom. And, you know, I was involved in the recruitment with Cody when he came here. Great kid. His brother actually played at Notre Dame early on for Brian Kelly, and a very smart guy. And he sat for 4 years really before he got a chance to play. And then was the, you know, MVP, defensive MVP of the national championship game and drafted in the fourth round. And Lathan Ransom played early, broke his leg, you know, had shoulder issues, had foot issues, and then finally was able to put together a whole year. And those guys were kind of the vocal leaders and the guys who made all the adjustments and got everything done on the defensive side of the ball. And so that was huge from that standpoint. for those guys. And so losing them, you're going to have guys that can now direct traffic back there. And so having Caleb Downs helps a lot because he's an incredibly smart guy. And this will now be his third year in college football and second at Ohio State. So that helps. But a lot's going to now be put on Sonny Styles, who will be a senior at Ohio State. And, you know, he's played safety first year. Last year he played linebacker. And so it's going to be up to him to be that vocal guy in the middle.
All right, let's get to the coaches, because once again, I know my audience is saying, all right, he's talking quarterbacks again. But I'm so fascinated by the quarterbacks, and we're going to get to it, because I think Ohio State, along with Oregon and Texas and Notre Dame, they're intriguing to me. Alabama, because they've got
Georgia. There's a lot to be replaced.
There's a lot to be replaced, and a lot of these schools didn't go to the portal like Ohio State did last year, like Notre Dame did last year, like Oregon did last year. But let's start with coaching. Brian Hartline, elite recruiter, best wide receiver coach in the game, and now he's the offensive coordinator. So what is his – how is he going to adapt to this role? And is Ryan Day – how much is he going to be part, Bobby, in the play calling?
Well, I think it's a kind of – there's always conversations that happen. Sure. And even with Ryan and Chip. And the important thing is that you have that relationship where you can talk things out. But I think this is going to lean heavily on Hartline this year. And they tried to look at doing this a couple of years ago, and maybe Ryan wasn't fully ready to relinquish his play calling duties. And then I think he began to realize just so much now in college football is outside of the white lines and the preparation that goes into running and being a CEO basically of everything, which is, you know, very, very difficult to do both. Brian learned a ton under Chip last year, and he's like, I was hoping he'd stay for 2 years just with everything. And when you're a receiver, learning the run game element, which Chip was so good at, can be tough. And so being able to dive into that with Chip, I think, was really, really big. And I think, you know, Day has given Hart a lot of confidence. He's allowed him to run this spring, and I think it's going to be his show moving forward. And I think everybody feels pretty good about that.
And then you flip it to the defense, and Jim Knowles, one of, if not the best defensive coordinator in the game. I mean, that was quite the battle in the national championship when you had Al Golden, who also gets poached by the Cincinnati Bengals, and then you had Jim Knowles. And that was a big coup for Ryan Day a couple years back to pull him from Oklahoma State. And now he leaves to go to Penn State, and we'll get to that showdown in November. But you bring in Matt Patricia. You're going back to the NFL ranks Ryan Day is, like he did last year with Chip Kelly. How does this transition go from Jim Knowles to Matt Patricia on defense?
So full disclosure, I played my last year in New England. It was Matty P's first year as coordinator up there. I love Matt. I think he's incredibly intelligent. You know, a lot of people pointed to what happened in Detroit, and we've talked about that, and him and I have had discussions on it and, you know, everything. And I think he's in a really good spot. He's a really intelligent. He's one of the smartest guys I've ever been around in coaching. And what he does and how he builds his team to what – Knowles had a system. And there's coaches that – there's two different ways to do it. Either you have your system and you're always bringing guys in to fit it, which that at times can leave you deficient sometimes if you don't have the exact players you need, and maybe they aren't as good at certain things as you would like. And then there's coaches that build systems. They have their ingredients, but they're a little more like Bob Ross up there on the canvas trying to figure out what we're good at. And if we need to paint that happy little tree, well, then we'll paint that happy little tree. And Matt Patricia kind of does a little more of that. So this defense will have a different feel to it kind of every season based upon the strengths and weaknesses of the players. And it's been fun to watch in the spring to be around it. It's a defense that I grew up with of the Belichick Parcells, Saban, like lineage. And so the verbiage is very similar in a lot of those cases, and there's a lot of similar concepts. And so I'm very excited. I feel like the players have really gravitated to it as well. And listen, Jim was great. He did a great job here. And, you know, but he moved on to Penn State. And to get Matt Patricia, I think that was a real coup for Ohio State in that defense. And when you combined him then with the position coaches they have, with Walton and Guerrieri in the secondary and Laurinaitis, and Larry Johnson up front in the linebacker spot, like it's a very, very strong defensive room, and as good as I've ever seen and been around.
Is the gig Julian Sands now, or is this a true competition?
I watched probably 13 of the 15 practices, and as to my eye looking at it, I couldn't tell you who I thought was playing better at that point. Mm. And so people say that this is Ryan like slow playing. And I'm like, listen, Julian has been in the system for about a year. Lincoln's been in for a couple. Lincoln is one of the, I mean, he was the Gatorade athlete of the year coming out of high school. The kid, I mean, could dunk a basketball from, you know, just inside the foul line. I mean, he's a phenomenal athlete, baseball player, does it all. And so there's elements that he can bring that Julian probably doesn't physically have. Now, Julian throws a really good ball. You know, he's not quite as big as Lincoln, and he still probably has some physical development to go. And that's one of the things that he's really working on this offseason, the summer, is being getting that frame big enough and to make sure that he, you know, can handle it all. But I mean, this is a legitimate competition, and both guys had some really good days. Both guys had some where I think Ryan was like, why are these guys on my roster? You know, like they're just, that's the inconsistency of youth. And so I think last year, you know, a battle, you know, with Devin and Will, not really as much. I mean, this year, I think that it's truly a battle because the old adage in the NFL, you can't fool the room. And so guys have to feel like they know who it is. Like it's obvious on the film when you're watching it during practice. And I don't think right now it is. And so I'm hoping that, you know, I think Ryan's probably hoping that someone begins to separate here as they begin training camp.
Well, it's a pretty easy open, right? You open up against an FCS. Oh, wait, no, you're playing the co-favorite to win the national championship. I mean, look, week one is just insane this year. I'm so excited for it. The fact that we get LSU Clemson at Clemson, we get this Texas Ohio State game, Notre Dame Miami, and it's an awesome week number one. I love it for the sport. But for Ohio State fans, you're like, wouldn't be terrible if we played a week three as opposed to week one. So what's your feel heading into this game? You know, if I think back to 2022, you know, that was a top five showdown. Notre Dame wasn't as good or projected to be as good as Texas is this year. So what's your feel in week number one right now? Point spread sits around 3 in favor of Ohio State, pretty much giving them, you know, home field, Bobby. So it's a true coin toss between these two teams from a talent standpoint. And you look at what the odds makers say, these are the two best teams in their eyes to win the national championship this year.
Well, I think you look at the weapons that Ohio State has, especially on the perimeter. It's like, well, whoever's playing quarterback, they're going to be in a pretty good spot. You know, you have athletes on defense. You've got some great players returning, you know, for Ohio State. Texas, obviously, the Arch Manning factor. And, you know, I'm not down on Arch Manning at all because I think he's – got everything that you want as a quarterback. He's seems to be throw the ball as well as his uncles, and he's a much better athlete. But still, he hasn't played a lot. And so you're going on the road. I wish it was a night game here. Unfortunately, due to the TV stuff, it's not going to be. But it'll be fun. It'll be interesting. I think 3 probably sounds about right. I mean, I would like, if it was 2.5 to Ohio State, I would take that all day long and lay it. 3 gives you some, a little bit of pause just because you feel like it's probably going to be in that 3 to 4 point range. And, you know, I could take a push on a field goal, but I would rather have the win. But that sounds about right as we see it now. I mean, I would have a better feel of it probably 2 weeks out after seeing a little bit of camp. But at this point, you know, it feels with both of these teams breaking in quarterbacks, there's probably going to be a mistake or two that's made by each side.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun, and two of the teams that certainly have questions, even though both are massive recruits. And I talked about it last week to open the show. Look, Julian Sand is no bum. He was a 5-star recruit. Arch Manning, obviously, all world recruit. When you look at the Ohio State schedule, and I'm gonna expand here, Bobby, into the rest of the Big Ten, but obviously you look at the Penn State game at home November 1st off the bye. You have the Michigan game, which will always be the big one, and they want to snap that 4-game losing streak. As you look at the rest of the schedule, as a analyst and as an alum, which game gives you the most kind of heartburn when you look at it like, ooh, that game, that might not be as easy as people think it will be?
Well, the nice thing is that the Penn State game, if you look historically over the last 30 years, and especially over the last like 15, the Penn State game has generally been, Ohio State's won the majority of them, is much to the chagrin of the James Franklin haters out there from Penn State. But the games have always been really close. They've been really good. And this is the final time since Penn State got in, I think in 94, if I'm not mistaken, Ohio State and Penn State have played every year. The United States won the majority, but it has been tight, and it's been an unbelievable matchup. And this is the last time they'll play each other every season, you know, just due to the scheduling. And I think some people, you know, the Penn State administration didn't want to do it anymore, which a lot of the Penn State fans and players I talked to were upset about it just because it was always such a fun game. But that game I would circle. The good news for Ohio State is, you know, they're coming off a bye. Penn State is coming off a bye too. So I think that helps you a little bit there because they're going to be in Wisconsin the game before that. And that'll be a dogfight up there in Madison. They're always amped for Ohio State. Their head coach, Luke Fickell, is an alum. That'll be a big game for them. So that kind of combination with at Illinois, at Wisconsin, bye week Penn State in the month of October, that little stretch right there is one to really keep an eye on.
You know, I wouldn't say it's job pressure, but I was talking last week with Scott Docterman about the Big Ten, and I said that there may not be anyone under more pressure than James Franklin this year because they've got all the talent. Everybody's coming back. They go get the big coup of Jim Knowles. They've got a NFL quarterback, best running back room in the country. And, you know, unlike Ohio State, Bobby, they've got a really easy non-conference schedule. So it's just kind of gliding into the year here. And some people believe this team can win a national championship. What's your expectations on Penn State this year? And how much pressure do you think there is on James Franklin?
Well, the argument that if not now, then when? And, you know, a lot of people that I've talked to with this, you know, like they have everything that you need, but they also have had James Franklin as their coach. And so like we've watched him kind of, you know, maybe fumble the end of some games where maybe you're not aggressive enough. And then people start saying that, and then you're too aggressive maybe later on. You know, I thought he did a pretty good job last year calling some of the games and making some big decisions in some critical moments and junctures, maybe better than before. But historically, when he's had good coordinators, he's been really good. And they have good coordinators this year. The other thing is Drew Aller. Like, are they going to – I mean, I watched him play in high school. He's a Cleveland kid. I believe Mentor, if I'm not mistaken. But he – you know, are they going to – can he push the ball down the field? And are they going to let him push the ball down the field to the outside? You know, that's – you don't have Ty Warren anymore. You still have the running backs. But you're going to have to get the ball to your receivers. And they haven't had great receivers. This year they're supposed to be better. And if that's the case, are you going to take the training wheels off and let him really go a little bit? And maybe you were going to there at the end of that semifinal and he throws a pick against Notre Dame. And, you know, does it give you hesitancy? Like, is there going to be cause for concern where you just play it safe? Because you're going to have to be aggressive against some of these teams like Ohio State. If you're Penn State, to you got to score points. And so to do that, you've got to find a way to move the football in big chunks.
When you look at the Big Ten as a whole, and I know it's, you know, 18 teams now, so it's kind of hard to narrow it down. And a lot of our time is focused on Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon, Michigan, maybe a little Indiana. Who, Bobby, excites you? Who do you think is a team that, I don't want to say they're going to be Indiana this year, but who's that team that in your eyes maybe isn't getting enough hype that they should be in the Big Ten?
Well, I think a lot of people have talked about Illinois. You know, Yep. You look at how they finished last year. You know, whenever you have your quarterback coming back, Brett Bielema has done a good job there of building that bully offense that he had at Wisconsin. And if you have a quarterback that's efficient, that can make plays off schedule. And last year, you know, they were a 10-win team. You know, they beat South Carolina, if I'm not mistaken,
in
the bowl game.
Yeah,
I mean, South Carolina was good now. Like that team, I wouldn't chop liver. They were a darn good football team that barely missed the playoffs. And I thought of all the SEC teams that missed it with them, Ole Miss and Bama, I thought they were the most dangerous with Sellers and what they were able to do with that D-line. So people can besmirch the bowl games don't mean anything and everything else. But when you put the pads on, you're out there trying to win. And nobody wants to get embarrassed. And Illinois beat a good South Carolina team. And so I look at them. Now their schedule is a little bit tougher this year. You know, they've got USC, they've got Ohio State, they've got, you know, Wisconsin on there. They have to go to Washington. So it may not be, you know, a cakewalk, but I think this is a team that in a 12-team playoff should be right on the fringe, if not possibly getting in.
Yeah, when you look at the returning production, Bill Conley, I think, has them top five in the country in returning production. All right, a couple before we get out of here, Bobby. You were teammates with Marcus Freeman. Let's start with this. Did you expect this when you were playing with him? I think you played with him, what, a couple of years there in Columbus? Did he come off as a guy that could end up being a head coach in college football?
You know, there's guys that you see as coaches when you play with, and there's some guys that, not that you're surprised, but you're just like, oh, okay, they got into that. I would say that I did not envision Marcus being a coach when I was playing. That's not that it's a negative thing. People are like, oh, was he, you know, not responsible? No, Marcus was a smart guy. But there's certain guys like Laurinaitis, I could see him getting into coaching. Like that was all kind of his game. Whereas it just, not that I didn't think Marcus couldn't do it. And then when he got done playing, he GA'd at Ohio State. You know, I think before that he was working in the administration with Gene Smith, working in the athletic department, and then wanted to get into coaching. And since he's been in there, it's like, okay, this fits you. And he's done a good job, and it was great. I got a chance to go up for the Florida State game last year with XM, and I've got a son who's got my third child is a boy who came up with me. He was in fifth grade. He'll be in sixth this year. And got to sit in Marcus's office and talk about stories, catch up with everybody. Because I always joke, like, he was my backup his freshman year. And so I, talked about how he'd, you know, go back and forth. And my younger brother's his age. He played at Cincinnati. So they, you know, they would go recruiting and do stuff together and, you know, a lot of those little banquets. And so I got to know Marcus pretty well. And I'm incredibly proud for him. When they won in the semifinals, like, all right, well, that's good. And so I was like, it's just going to – at least I'm going to have somebody there that I want to win. And then, unfortunately, you know, Ohio State wins. Or fortunately, it's like, okay.
I was going to say, fortunately. You still are here for your guys.
Yeah, but, you know, people went down. And, you know, my coach, Jim Tressel, who coached him, you know, went down and shook his hand and talked. Like, I can't believe, like, Jim did that and Marcus. I'm like, why? It's his head coach. Like, not that Jim doesn't want Ohio State to win, but like he's incredibly proud of what Marcus has been able to do. And if it was anybody else out here, he would have been probably standing on the sideline there with him if he wanted him to. So Marcus has done a great job. He's built that program up. They're very talented. The players love him. They love him. I think the alumni do. And listen, when you're the first time head coach, you're going to make mistakes. You know, the Marshall game happens, you know, the Northern Illinois happens, Stanford, but going through that, I think ultimately makes you a much better coach. And just similarly to Ohio State, like his guys rallied around him because they love him, because he's a passionate guy. You can see how much they care about him because of how much he cares about them. And when you have that, that's when you can have success. He's an authentic dude, and they're going to be really good this year. And they're going to be really good as long as he's at the helm. Like I truly believe that.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I think some news is about to come out shortly on recruiting. So they're right there amongst the Ohio States and the Bamas, et cetera. From a recruiting standpoint, that shouldn't come as a big shock. I want to wrap on this. Diego Pavia, who from a gambling standpoint, we love Diego Pavia because he seems to always cover as an underdog. Last year, Vanderbilt 8-2 as an underdog against the spread. His last year at New Mexico State when he was healthy because he got hurt in the CUSA championship game, 5-1-1 against the spread as an underdog. So look, he's got a bravado, and that's what we love about this sport. So Bobby, I'm curious, as a former player, as a guy that, you know, now covers the sport, what did you make of his comments, not only about the Big Ten, and you come to the SEC to play the big boys, you don't go to the Big Ten, but then he's also talking smack about Tennessee, saying we should run the state. Like, what do you make of Diego Pavia and heading into this year, what he had to say?
You know, talking trash smack about the Big Ten, a little trash talk, that's fine. Like the interconference stuff, but the intra-conference stuff, when you start, especially intrastate, where,
yeah,
I mean, let's be realistic. Like, no one thinks about Tennessee. No one's thinking about Vanderbilt football. Like, I mean, there's been a handful of guys that have come out of there. I mean, Jay Cutler's my age. You know, they've had some players that have come through there that have been good. But when you think about Tennessee, you're thinking about the power T, you know, the burn orange. Like, that's what it's all about. And so for him to say that, like, that's – and especially, like, Tennessee, it's not like they were bad. They were in the playoff last year. You know, like, this is a good –
they beat Vanderbilt.
Yes. This isn't some Tennessee team that limped to 6-6 last year. Like, they're a good squad, and Heupel's a good coach. And you look at Vanderbilt's schedule, I mean, they got South Carolina, at Bama, LSU, at Texas, you know, wrapping up at Tennessee as they always do. Like, if they can find a way to get 8 wins, like, hats off to you. But yeah, that's a heck of a job. But I mean, they're going to have a very, very tough stretch, and they better try to get some wins early. Not to mention they're at or Virginia Tech in the non-conference as well.
Yeah, and don't sleep on Georgia State, who beat them last year. Also, also worth noting there. But you know what? A little off-season fodder is always always fun for the sport. Hey, Bobby, I really appreciate it, man. This is awesome, and I look forward to maybe picking your brain a little bit later on into the season.
Absolutely. Give me a call.
We keep it rolling. Excited for our next guest. A little handshake across the aisle, so to speak, as one of my favorite college football podcasts, outside of this one, of course, the Cover 3 podcast, which I listen to religiously, and it's a great listen. Make sure you get it wherever you get your podcasts. You can watch it on YouTube as well. And the man who runs things over there, Chip Patterson, joins us right now. Chip, appreciate you jumping on, and I know you guys aren't afraid to dive into a little gambling chatter on your podcast. So we'll dive in.
Certainly not.
Yeah, a little bit. We've obviously had Bud on the network many a times before, but I want to start with, speaking of gambling, and I just mentioned this to Bobby Carpenter, who was just on the show. Diego Pavia is the underdog king. 8-2 last year, ATS as an underdog. At New Mexico State, when he was healthy in his final year, because he got hurt in that championship game against Liberty, 5-1-1 ATS. But boy, you win a little bit down there in Nashville, Chip, and I guess you get a little braggadocious. Now he's calling out the Big Ten, which I guess makes sense because they don't play any Big Ten teams. And then he's also calling out Tennessee. So are we pro Diego Pavia puffing out the chest? Because I feel like our little underdog is no longer under the radar.
Yeah, I think that I did not look at him, even though there is the underdog statistic and trend that follows him. I mean, do you remember what happened in a practice facility in the New Mexico?
I think there was some urination.
Yeah. I was going to say, and then any of the stories from the Pavia Mafia, from, you know, all of his brothers that are certainly a part of the picture. I mean, this is, I don't want to say this negatively, because, you know, as we're sitting here talking about this sport that we love, I want this to come through that I'm saying it affectionately, but he's an antagonistic character. You know, like it is not a root for me. I'm the little guy. I mean, he is out there looking to start fights. And so, yeah, I expect this. To answer your question, I expect this from Diego Pavia. You know, my friendship with Barton Simmons, the general manager of Vanderbilt football, the best general manager in the country, has me also wanting to add that, you know, this is part of what they're trying to do in terms of a mentality change around Vanderbilt, which is to not just walk in and accept that you're lesser than, to really in creating that mentality, hopefully push yourself to become better. But, you know, this is going to be a new season for him and a new season for Vanderbilt after they caught some teams off guard last year. I don't think they're going to come creeping up on anybody in 2025.
Well, it wasn't that long ago that his head coach was telling us at SEC Media Days they were going to be the class of the conference, right?
Right.
Yeah, so this,
that's from the top. That's I just, the messaging was, you got to eliminate the old way of thinking. You know, you got to truly have that belief if you're ever going to have a chance. Because look, otherwise, then you're losing 6 or 7 SEC games before you get off the bus. If you've got the mentality that you're lesser than in the league, then you've got to flip that to be able to give yourself a chance.
Now, Georgia State might have something to say about that, you know, week 3 or week 4.
No, you know, but that's learning how to handle success, right? You know, yeah. that is figuring out, you know, I'm sure at some point we might talk about Notre Dame. Notre Dame went on that hot run last year, but had a chip on its shoulder and mm-hmm. already got the sort of shell-shocked moment of Northern Illinois. Now we get to see a Notre Dame team try to learn how to handle success and go into the season expected to be something special against a tough early season schedule. So there's in this era where we have continued to get more and more data. And of course I'm, as a purveyor of chipolytics, you know, I do enjoy my arts and sciences, but sometimes I need to remind myself even of the human nature of this and that these are very, very young young men that are out there and being told a lot of good stuff from Monday through Friday. And sometimes it does impact them on Saturdays.
Look, Chip, that is why, you know, I have a segment on my tailgate show where we go to Murray's Delicatessen. We look for the sandwich spots. I talked about it, and I think you hit on it on your podcast. I talked about it on Monday. You hit it on Tuesday. There's a great spot Arkansas find themselves in early on in the season where they play Ole Miss, they play Notre Dame right there in the middle. Oh, we got to go play Memphis. All right, this is going to be annoying.
God, you know, Memphis is going to be so keyed up for that game too.
My God. I mean, give me four and a half, please, odds makers right now, and I will be very heavily involved. And I opened up the show looking at tons of situational spots. So you're absolutely right. I mean, it's kind of simplistic, but that's one of the big things that I look at from a college standpoint, both in basketball and football, is finding those situational spots. I just texted a buddy today. I'm like, hey, how good is South Dakota going to be in the FCS? Because Iowa State goes to Dublin, then plays Iowa. In the middle, they have to play South Dakota. So I'm like, how good are they? Could they be feisty against Matt Campbell's bunch there in week number one? So, yeah, that is
– wasn't that game like 14-6 last year or something? Iowa State, I think, is
Iowa State. How about this, Chip? I was reading through Phil Steele's magazine. He's got some good gambling nuggets. Iowa State is 3-10 ATS all time against FCS opponents.
Yeah, I think that they spring game it like all the way. You know, I mean, we're running halfback dive. We're running like 4-3 stack. I mean, I just think. I would have to go back and look at the tape, but if I'm to just reach back into my mind and throw out a reckless allegation, because what else do we do in June when we're talking college football? I would allege that Iowa State in that FCS spot on their schedule early season, usually hovering around the Iowa game, they just spring game it. They go out there looking to break a sweat and win by 1 point or more, and that's about all there is.
Last year they beat North Dakota 21-3 as a 27-point favorite.
Yep.
And then the one that I love, Chip, was 2021. They played Northern Iowa, 32-point favorites. They won by 6.
Yeah.
So just keep that one in the back pocket there, people.
File that away. I think Matt Campbell is a great coach, but as a bettor, it is important to not get that misconstrued with something that might go against their expressed game plan of what they're trying to do on that day.
So, Chip, a theme that I've been running through all offseason long is when you look at the odds board this offseason, there are 5 of the 8 teams. There are 8 teams, Chip, that are favored to make the college football playoff right now. It's Ohio State, Texas, Penn State, Oregon, Georgia, Bama, Notre Dame, Clemson. 5 of them, and I'm not even including Texas, have question marks coming in at the quarterback position. And I would say 5.5. I think Arch Manning's going to be great, but who knows? He hasn't really started that many games yet in his career. So you mentioned Notre Dame. Let's go to them. Tons of success last year after the early season adversity. Now you've got a true redshirt freshman quarterback, more than likely. I know Kenny Minchie's technically in the race there, but from everything I've gathered, it's going to be CJ Carr starting at Miami. What do you expect of the Irish? They're an odds-on favorite to make the playoff. They've got a lot of talented players. They've got arguably the best running back in the country. I know your colleague, Tom Fornelli, very much is in favor of Jeremiah Love. What do you expect from the Irish in year 4 of the Marcus Freeman era?
I think they will be very good. I think they're a double digit win team. I think that the absence of Al Golden, is something I'll at least have my eye on. I just thought he did such a good job, and it might've just been one of those one season, because it took Al Golden a couple years before he had his masterpiece, right? With the way that the Fighting Irish defense were playing last year. Chris Ash, of course, taking over there for those who don't know. And Chris Ash has talked about it. He said, look, I'm not bringing in the Chris Ash defense. We've got a great thing here. Marcus Freeman, former defensive coordinator, he's going to have a say in it as well. So you've got someone who, the Texas stint was a little bit mixed, but I think you've got a good coach taking over. But I thought Al Golden did a great job keeping my eye on the defensive side, especially with some tough challenges early on in the season. I think that what we saw last year in Notre Dame's run, and I've mentioned this on the podcast, so I apologize if I'm boring you, but man, they had so many season-ending injuries to starters and key contributors, and they bounced back. I mean, whoever was the next man up came in and were ready to go, and it really showcased a competitive depth on that roster in a way that impressed me. That has me saying, well, I know they lost a lot of guys off last year's team, But the guys who are stepping into the new starting roles aren't necessarily guys who didn't see the field last year. Yeah, they got to mix and match some pieces. And defensively, I think they've got some big – I mean, losing Howard Cross stinks. That guy played really, really good football. It was so consistent for a couple of years. But I think that there is a – like you said, it's a talented team where even the players that are stepping into new roles, we've either seen them or we trust that they're going to be able to keep them, you know, competing for college football playoff, national championship, things in the like. And that's where I think CJ Carr steps into a great position with a not just a great individual running back in Jeremiah Love, but a deep running back room. Notre Dame's wide receivers have been a huge, not a weakness, but at least a spot leaving something to be desired over the
weakness
last couple
years. Weakness is
fair. Yeah, okay. Like but I don't think they're there right now. Yeah. So he's just like, he's like, okay, he's stepping into a really, really good situation. I don't think they need him to be the final form of CJ Carr, but I think that even that entry level CJ Carr is probably good enough for them to achieve their goals. And then like one last thing on CJ Carr, I think this is really important, big picture, program wide for Marcus Freeman, because Notre Dame really could have just continued to cycle through transfer portal quarterbacks and become one of those transfer portal du jour type spots where they just go in. But if they want to have like real big time, long-term sustained success off this little run, having somebody that you recruited to your program that you can develop and hopefully send them on to be a first round pick in the NFL draft, like that is what's going to bring in the recruits to come. And if you look at a lot of the success, like of course we've got our Joe Burrows, you know, we've got our Jaden Danielses, we've got our transfer hero stories, but I think that we're going to start to see a little bit of a pendulum swinging the other way where the very best quarterbacks in the sport might be these ones that stay in one place. And to get those kind of quarterbacks at the highest level, you got to be able to prove it. So this is a huge opportunity with CJ Carr stepping in for Notre Dame to show the quarterbacks in the class of 29, 30, 31, exactly what you can do in South Bend.
Chip, who's the quarterback this year that you feel like, just based off of what you've watched, you feel like is not getting enough love? Like I feel like Sawyer Robertson is a guy that, you just look at the stats, and David Hale came on the pod a couple weeks ago. I thought he had an awesome article comparing blind resumes. The dude is a baller, and we're not talking enough about him, in my opinion. You know, I think Damon Williams is exciting at Washington. So who's a guy for you, guy or couple guys, that you think are kind of just, hey, let's whisper about them because I think they could be pretty darn good this year.
Yeah, it was so funny. In the Heisman Trophy episode at the beginning of the week, Tom Fornelli and I laughed about how as you're working your way down the odds board, there's players that you think are interesting that you would like to talk about. There's a crew that you just want to skip. And then you jump down into an area where you start to see your Sawyer Robertsons, you start to see your Damon Williams. And I'll add one more here that I do think is extremely intriguing and potentially like very, very important. And that's Jaden Maiva. Because if we are to my friend Bud Elliott always likes to talk about, you know, what we can learn from action from a program, but also what we can learn from inaction. Because USC obviously let Miller Moss go. Miller Moss goes to Louisville. Louisville's pretty excited about getting Miller Moss, but USC went ahead and let him go. And USC, to the best of our sort of knowledge, didn't get really, really serious in any of the, you know, the bidding or you know, the interest or the recruitment of a lot of top portal quarterbacks. So, you know, I know that everyone thinks Lincoln's lost his fastball, but does the inaction of bringing in real competition to Jaden Maiva really say something about his confidence in Jaden Maiva? A full offseason of knowing that he's QB1 going into the year with wide receivers that I think are really good. So I would say that Jaden Maiva is probably the one where I look at USC and I am a perennial sucker. I will admit it. Like I think that we figured out I might be in Ryder Cup years. I buy in on USC every 2 years. Then I get burned and then I swear them off. And by the time we get to the next season, I'm buying in again. But Jaden Maiva getting the apparent, I'll say apparent, vote of confidence from Lincoln Riley and USC that might tell me that he's poised to have a really good season, something that would have him rating and ranking as a higher quarterback than where he is right now.
if he can cut down on the turnovers, look, they were driving on your network, the network of stars. I was in attendance as Notre Dame played USC. Yep. They're driving to tie the game, and he throws a pick six.
He
throws another pick six. Like, yeah, yes. That's look, he in his last two games, Chip, he was Jaden Maiva, right? He threw for over 600 yards against two pretty good defenses in Notre Dame and Texas A&M, but he also threw five interceptions combined. So it's like, if you could cut down on that, yeah, he's exciting. I don't know if I can trust him. That's my concern.
Right. And again, this is perennial sucker Chip Patterson buying back in on USC. So buyer beware on that one.
But I'll say this, Chip. It's definitely a buy low. I mean, there's not a lot of people out there be like, yeah, fight on, you know?
Yeah, this is, the sensible mind says USC is an 8-4 team. And I'm telling you that I'm talking about them as though they are going to go through a schedule and come out with as 9-3, 10-2. So we'll see if I'm going to get burned again, but my hand does have a lot of scars from the stove.
So I thought you guys, and you know, when you're betting season win totals, it's so important to look at the schedules. Who are you playing off buys, all of that. And you guys had a great episode, and I certainly encourage everyone to go back and check it out. Ranking the most difficult schedules in college football and also ranking the easiest ones, because what was it, 2 years ago, you know, in the preseason, you looked at Louisville and you're like, their schedule has nobody on it. They're going to make the ACC championship. And lo and behold, they made the ACC championship. So let's start with the difficult ones. Who, in your opinion, Chip, has the most challenging schedule or schedules, teams that jumped out to you heading into this season?
Well, this was really, really funny because I put together this big argument for Mississippi State and overlooked Florida and realized that as they were talking about Florida, that all my arguments for Mississippi State were exactly the same for Florida. So let me start off with just sort of like Flora, Mississippi State, or it's not Florabama. You know, I don't have a good line here, but just those, that combination where you're playing Georgia, Texas, and Tennessee in conference play the three teams that were in the college football playoff last year. You're playing Ole Miss, you're playing Texas A&M. It's just really, really brutal. Obviously Florida adds Miami and Florida State. Mississippi State has to play the reigning Big 12 champs, Arizona State, in the non-con. But other ones that stood out outside of the SEC that I think were pretty notable. Number one, I think Wisconsin is extremely tough. And that's a tough look for a team that I don't think has the roster for some big resurgence. And Luke Fickell is not gone how we thought this was going to go when we were talking about Luke Fickell 4 years ago. No, whoa, yeah, once he gets his crack with a big program, man, Wisconsin is a big program, and it has not gone well, and it doesn't look like it's going to go well for difficulty. And then one more, I know it seems like it's impossible that an ACC team would have a tough schedule, but Syracuse has to play Tennessee and Notre Dame in the non-con. They get Clemson, Miami, SMU in conference play, and the group that you want to see, like as an ACC coach, you want to go look at your schedule. You want to see Stanford and Cal. You want to see Wake Forest. You want to see UVA. None of those teams on Syracuse's schedule. So one of the toughest schedules in the ACC, undoubtedly, but I also think a sneaky tough schedule nationally.
Yeah, we look at Syracuse. They win 10 games last year, 9 in the regular season. Their win total is 5.5 because of that schedule that you pointed out there. And what are they going to do at quarterback? I know they added Steve Angeli, but they have the weird situation where they announced that Ricky Collins will be the starter. And, you know, that'll be a challenge. And then you look at Florida, and I want to jump to Florida because they're really intriguing to me because, you know, your colleagues certainly know that program well as an arch rival of Danny Cannell and Bud Elliott's. So when you look at Florida this year, win total 6.5 or 7.5, you know, I joked last year, Chip, that if Sunbelt Billy got them to, you know, 500, that he should be coach of the year, and he got them to 8 wins. Like, I do feel like because they got off to such a slow start and we just all assumed that it was going to be the end of the road, you know, Florida deserves a lot of credit for the way that they ended that season. And now you've got these expectations. So what do you expect from the Gators this year? Brutal schedule, obviously, as you alluded to, but a lot of excitement down there with the Gators.
Yeah, they've got it's one of the teams that comes out of the early mock draft season with maybe a little bit more pop you know, the mock draft, the NFL talent evaluators, you know, all of a sudden they start to come back talking about Slaughter and Barber on the offensive line as being players that could end up being top 30, top 40 type picks. You've got Sapp on the defensive line. You know, we are starting to put together a look at Florida as having some of the most, you know, SEC line of scrimmage talent. And all of a sudden you're like, okay, well, that's what you need. That's what you need. And we saw in flashes that when DJ Lagway was healthy for an entire game, Florida's offense was operating at just a different level. You know, I mean, it was only about half the season. I mean, we're talking, you know, 35 some odd points per game, you know, yards per game were up. Like all of that has, you know, sort of coming together. So for Billy Napier against any other schedule, you know, then you'd be looking at this as saying, okay, we'd like to see you be 6-2 in conference play, 9-3 overall. But because they are playing one of the toughest schedules around, they could consistently beat the teams that they are rated higher than, lose to the teams that they are rated lower than, and they could finish 7-5. And that would be, to your point about last year, that would be, I think, a strong and successful season for the Gators, where you come away saying, all right, you know, as long as they were competitive and not totally outclassed, but I just don't expect this to be a team that's going to get outclassed. When it comes to nitpicking, sure, some of the offensive skill positions, it seems like DJ Lagway might need to be that kind of quarterback that elevates everyone around them. But when you're good on both the lines of scrimmage and you know, bring back a lot from last year, they didn't lose a ton of guys to the portal, there might be something to this. You know, Billy, like Sunbelt Billy, his last year at Louisiana, I knew he was going to, excuse me, I didn't know. That sounds like I'm a reporter or something. I guessed that he was going to leave because it was one of those situations where not only was he peaking with Louisiana, but he was peaking with a group that was about to like all move on. You know, like a core that had been together for 2-3 seasons and they'd kind of all played up together. Like this was going to be their moment. And so that was a super successful moment for him. Can Billy Napier, after practicing some good roster retention and keeping the group together, can he have a similar moment like that with Florida? I would say 8 wins as a special season. 9 wins. I mean, shoot, if they're 9-3, you're going to hear
playoff.
You're going to hear people talk playoff very, very seriously. So, I think high floor, even against a difficult schedule, but DJ Lackway probably needs to be something close to transcendent if we are going to hit that sort of 9-3 conversation.
Well, Florida's arch rival outside of Florida State, Georgia, who they always play down in Jacksonville in the Drink Responsibly Bowl, whatever they're calling it nowadays. What do you think of Georgia this year? Because, you know, it's funny, we were doing a segment on a radio show that I do down in Memphis, and my co-host was like, I don't know about Kirby Smart. I'm like, well, what's their, you know, I get some in-game questions, but the dude hasn't really lost much. They always get to the playoff, and they did win the SEC last year, which is something that I feel like kind of people forget out of their mind because they lost in the quarterfinals to Notre Dame. But they've got Gunnar Stockton, and you mentioned, you know, about USC, right? Inaction. It seemed like Georgia was kind of inactive out there from a quarterback standpoint. So I guess they believe in Gunnar Stockton. Do you?
Yes, I do. I think that we've got a upgrade. I think we've got a vibes upgrade at the quarterback position to go from Carson Beck to Gunnar Stockton. And I'm taking some of that from the way that Kirby Smart talked about Gunnar as Gunnar stepped in. I mean, immediately I really don't think he was kidding when he said that this is the type of guy that everybody else wants to play better for. You know, when we saw the way that his teammates were reacting to him after the SEC championship game, that Gunnar Stockton from Rabun County, Tiger, Georgia, population of 618, that like this guy who's sticking his head into tackles to be able to try to get that extra yard, and that doesn't that sound like the national championship winning quarterback that they had from a few years ago? You know, the in-state kid who's just going out there being kind of a gamer, and it's not as though he's without talent. He is a talented player. It's just maybe not the mold of that surefire NFL quarterback that some people like to fall in love with, you know, Captain Toolsy and all that. So I am a believer. I think that I'm encouraged that Georgia has sort of, you know, sat up and said, okay, like I understand that we have the number one or number two class almost every single year, but I'm going to acknowledge that sometimes we need to go get some transfer portal help. And that's exactly what they did at wide receiver. That's exactly what they did at edge rusher, getting Elo Madozie from Army. There are interesting spots on Georgia's roster where decisions have to be made between some older players who haven't necessarily played up to four-star, five-star billing and young four-star, five-stars who are going to be like hoping to get playing time. And that's a very inside Georgia type problem because it's still a team that's going to go out there and finish 10-2 at worst in the regular season. But I think that that's what I'm going to be watching is, you know, who wins some of those position battles in fall camp. But, you know, to answer your question, I think Georgia's an 11-1 team in the regular season. I think that they're an SEC championship contender. Big bodies still matter. Accumulating talent still matters. And I kind of repulsed when you were talking about Kirby Smart because, I mean, I just think he's the best coach in college football right now. So
my pushback. I'm like, I wouldn't go that far, right?
I wouldn't go that far. And as much as I hated it for my bedtime, I mean, that was almost Belichickian the way he's like, oh, I get a timeout for every single overtime.
Right.
I'm going to call 8 timeouts. When, you know, I'm going to make you go so deep into your playbook, you don't even know what you're running anymore. I would also add that, remember the timeout against Ohio State in the semifinals a couple years ago that ended up nipping the fake punt in the bud? I'm in on Kirby Smart. I'm in on Georgia as a contender. But whether or not they win a national championship, they've got a lot of questions to answer sort of within the depth chart when it comes to winning those games against the other best teams in the country.
Don't do a wholesale line shift on Kirby. That's where he gets, if you take the whole team off the field and put a whole new team on, that's where he gets a little confused.
That's where Marcus got him. I mean, yeah. Marcus Freeman changed the way that we look at him, not only just by making it to the national title game, but the path that they took, you know, like it's just, they beat Georgia, they beat Penn State. You don't fake your way through that. So yeah, it's a really fun, you were talking about the 8 teams. Those are the same 8 that I've been talking about as my top tier. I think all of them have questions and I think that I feel very confident that one of them is the national champion. Who answers the questions is like the storyline of the season for me.
All right, I want to wrap with this, Chip. You live in the Triangle down there in North Carolina. Fascinating 3 teams this year. Maybe Duke not as fascinating, but I think they're interesting, bringing in a high-profile transfer quarterback, and that was the guy they wanted right away. We want Mensa from Tulane. So North Carolina's got all the talking points in the world. You know, Dave Doran's squad maybe flying under the radar a little bit with MJ Morris. I'm intrigued by him, and then Duke. So the floor is yours on the Triangle. What do you expect from those 3 this year?
My friends, Joe Ovius and Joe Giglio, I'm going to give them the trademark on this one. It's called being Triangle good. You know, I think we've got a chance to have 3 Triangle good teams, 3 bowl teams, 3 teams that are probably not competing for conference championships, but are going out there and looking outclassed against the best in the ACC and fighting for scraps with the other teams in the middle class of that conference. You know, for NC State, I think it's a really interesting look at Dave Doran, one of the longest tenured coaches at their current position in the ACC, because he has had some of his most successful seasons recently with the defense leading the way. He loses his coordinator, Tony Gibson, who goes to take over as the new head coach at Marshall. Last year, the defense was not as good, took a big step off a cliff. And look, man, I get it. You know, we have seen, even in his short time in the NFL, Peyton Wilson is an amazing football player. Yeah. And that when you had Peyton Wilson and Tanner Engel and NFL players along the defensive line, the defense could afford to maybe in a few spots make some mistakes. And they just didn't have those erasers last year. I think their best player is CJ Bailey, but that requires winning games a little bit differently from an offensive standpoint than you did when it was a little bit more of let's manage this game and try and win it 24-21. So will Dave Doran, deep into his coaching career, deep into his tenure at NC State, is he going to really open up this offense, or are they still going to be trying to win the same way with a defense that's not as good? You talk about Duke. This was another thing that showed up in my research recently. So if you are to judge offensive success in terms of expected points added per snap, EPA per snap offense. The five best offensive performances for Duke last year, they were 1-4. It was the win against Middle Tennessee and then the four losses on their schedule. Those were also, outside of Middle Tennessee, some of their worst defensive performances. They were 5-1 in one-score games. So how does that pair with bringing in Darian Mensah? And, you know, why are your best offensive performances and losses and your best defensive performances not as good for the offensive side? You know, they prided themselves on, I think the messaging, I could be wrong, but Manny Diaz would talk in interviews about dragging you into the sewer, you know, winning games on the margins. And I get that for Duke football, but I mean, is that what Darian Mensah was sold on? So it'll be interesting to see what the identity of that team is. I think they lose a few more one-score games, probably take a step back in the win total, even if the team's about the same. And then for North Carolina, let's see what the big brain on Bill has, because they're bringing in bigger players than were on the team last year. They're bringing in bigger players that in some cases are leaving other power conference programs because they couldn't get on the field. They were recruited to power conference programs because they're big, but something about their play meant that they couldn't get on the field. So that is like, I had somebody point it out as almost all the way up to Bill Parcells. You know, Bill Parcells, these heights, these weights, I can teach you what you need to know about football, but I can't teach you size. That Belichick and, you know, this staff have kind of gone into the portal and they just want big guys. They just want the look of the team off the bus to be different. And that's great. But man, if they can't play, it's going to be a problem. So if the big brain on Bill can teach better football and better execution to the large humans they brought in, yeah, man, the schedule's there for them to win 8 games, maybe more. But this is going to be their methods put to the test right off the bat. I will say locally, for a little insider, you know, part of this, they are setting the bar low. They are talking a lot about 2026 recruiting and just talking about stacking good days. They are not coming out here trying to send a message that they are competing for the ACC in year one. And so I think it's interesting that they've got year zero type expectations, both in terms of how long is Bill going to be around? Well, he's trying to sell you that he's here for a couple of years, but also how successful are they going to be year one? It doesn't sound like even in the building, there's a thought that they're going to be 10-2 here in 2025.
Yeah, buckle up week one. Josh Hoover's pretty good, man. That'll be a fun one. With TCU coming to town on Labor Day Monday. Quick correction, I said MJ Morris. CJ Bailey, of course, not MJ Morris. A blast from the past there in Raleigh. Hey, Chip, I know you got to run. Appreciate it, man. Love your work, and hopefully catch up with you soon.
Yep, sounds good. Y'all be well.
Our thanks to Bobby Carpenter at BCarp3 and Chip Patterson at Chip_Patterson. Make sure to check out Bobby Carpenter, the Bobby Carpenter Show on X, the Morning Juice on 97.1 in Columbus, and he also does work on SiriusXM's College Sports Station, and Chip Patterson all over CBS Sports and the Cover 3 podcast. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe to the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Should have more great guests for you next week. Starting to work on those now, but looking forward to continue to get you ready for the college football season. My name is Tim Murray. We'll be back next week right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.